So this is our this is the first day of this 3-day retreat. I am here for you. The Buddhist path of altruistic living. Easier said than done. Good. We are on retreat. I hope by now everybody has noticed. You did not wake up in your normal bed. You are not going about your usual Friday activities or your Saturday activities and for a good part of your Sunday activities. You are not following your usual daily schedule. You are not eating your usual foods. Everybody has noticed that. Good. There's a reason for that. We go on retreat to step back from, to step away from our usual activities, our usual ways of living, our usual roles and responsibility. We retreat some from so we can focus on something that in the course of our daily life we often are not attentive to or we give very little time or energy to. We are not that focused on. So the reason we have pulled back from our daily life and the reason we have entered this a structured environment in silence is to give everyone here a rare opportunity. Everyone here has a rare opportunity over these days, and some of it has already passed, to focus very concentratedly and attentively and deeply and hopefully sincerely on profound matters of one's life, and the life of your relationships, the life of the world. It'll be over in a flash, even though to some of you it may be going slowly. When you look back, it'll be over in a flash. Please do not waste time, even though outwardly coming on retreat, your life, what you're doing is very different. You may find that your mind wants to do the same old, same old. You might have noticed that already. Please understand that the reason we go on retreat and we make these physical changes in our life and physically come to another place is to help us change our minds, right? If we just come to retreat and follow the schedule and eat the food and, and maintain silence, do not speak, and our physical activity is fairly circumscribed, and if we do not pay attention to our mind, we are wasting this golden opportunity. So if you have found that you are indulging, you hear that word, indulging, your everyday business as usual mind, you are wasting this opportunity, okay? It doesn't mean that your usual everyday mind will not arise. It has that kind of energy. But if you are indulging it, okay, then you're just wasting time. All this outward, all your efforts to remove yourself from your usual daily life, all the structure of the retreat will be of no use. We are here to understand and to change and transform our minds. Is that clear? That's all we're here for, right? This body is just kind of a thing that's going around, you know, it kind of gets us from here to there, okay? It's very difficult only with the mind to eat food or to go to the bathroom, you know what I'm saying? You need kind of a body to kind of get you down to the meditation hall, into the dining hall, you know, it gets the food from the plate up to the mouth, right? You see what I'm saying? Gets you back. So, you know, that's, the body has its role here. But it's all in support of the mind. Is that clear? So if we are spending our time thinking about our body or thinking about what other bodies are doing, and if you're spending your time thinking about the past, thinking about the future, or just, you know, thinking about everybody else or everything else, you are what? Wasting your time. You're just doing same old, same old. So it is very important for all of us, right at the beginning of retreat, to, you know, to do an experiment. I mean, this is what? Today is Friday morning. Sunday morning, this time, we'll be having our final talk. So 2 days. Do an experiment. I challenge each of us here. Do an experiment. Can you, for 2 days, put aside your usual concerns and issues and dramas and focus on the topics and the meditations that'll be presented to you? That's a challenge for each of you. You know, and can you learn how to live a life of intention and commitment rather than a life just of your conditioning, the way you've always done it? If you continue to lead a life where you are just coming from your conditioning, it will just continue. To go on a spiritual path is to, you know, it's a spiritual path. It's another path. It's different than the path we know. So there has to be some understanding of that. There has to be some commitment. There has to be intention. Now again, everybody last night set their intentions. Is that true? For the retreat. How many of you have impeccably lived them since then? We laugh because why? Because that's the nature of this crazy mind of ours. You know, we'll set an intention and 5 minutes later we've totally forgotten. So that's where we practice. Is that clear? It's at that moment that we practice. The way we cultivate intention is not getting up in the morning and setting an intention. It's getting up in the morning and setting an intention and then using that intention as kind of the template for our day. We keep coming back to it. We keep reminding ourselves. Every time we stray, we do what? We come back. And everybody here is unique. Some may only have to come back 20 times. There may be some here who have to come back 2,000 times today. It doesn't matter. The important thing is that you do that. Every time the mind wants to meander into the past, into the future, wants to just ruminate and obsess and fantasize, and right? You have to know it. That's mindfulness. You have to know what your mind is doing and just let it go. Come back to your intention. To live a life of intention, conscious intention, is the basis of a spiritual life. It's a basis of change and transformation. And it is a muscle that needs to be exercised. That's how it develops. Now, many of us, in terms of work, in terms of a craft, in terms of a hobby, in terms of lots of other things, have learned to follow through, right? But usually it's because of externals, right? External rewards, fear of punishment. You know, that's kind of our deal as human beings. very few of us know how to generate from within, in this case, an altruistic intention. That has to receive its nurturance from ourself, not others. It's not going to be a financial reward. That's a high motivation for people. It's not going to be, a degree. It's not going to be a raise. It's not going to be a promotion. It's not going to be a this or a that, is it? It's something within you. And so that learning how to make, to set an intention within yourself and to maintain that within yourself and to learn how to be impeccably connected to that intention is what it means to have an inner life, which is about having a spiritual life. And we can be have been successful and know how to be successful in our outer life, our worldly life, based on the rewards and punishments and the gains and losses and the ego gratifications of that life. But this is different. It's very personal. It's about you. What could be more personal than that? It's about you and how you want to be in this life. Last week, there was a day of mindfulness, and we talked about, this whole thing about being and doing. Many people know that, you know. In our culture, we are very good doers. We're task-oriented. But we don't have an inner agenda of how we want to be while we're doing. How do I want to be today? Not what do I want to do today, right? Everybody know what a to-do list is? Everybody here has a to-do list, loves their to-do list. How many people have a to-be list? We laugh, it sounds crazy. No, nobody talks about that. Well, that's what the Dharma's about. It's about learning to generate a to-be list. Okay? But I'm sure you know all this already. So we are very fortunate that we can, all of us here have great fortune, that we can pull back from our lives, our responsibilities, our families, our work, whatever we are doing, and take 2 or 3 days to just focus on altruism. What a wonderful thing. Altruism. In our community, the Florida Community of Mindfulness, we have what we call our developmental path of awakening. The first path we call the path of mindful living. This is kind of the foundation of our spiritual life. Many people these days, they come to the path because they're stressed, because their minds are all over the place, because they feel disconnected. And so the practice of mindfulness and the practice of mindful living is a very wonderful way to establish some ground and some solidity and some presence in one's life. Also included in the path of mindful living is emotional healing. Many people come to a spiritual path with emotional wounds. That sabotage all their efforts for transformation. There are deep cracks in our foundation. And if we don't take care of those cracks, if we don't fill them in, our capacity to create a spiritual life will always be sabotaged, be undermined. Okay? It's like, again, the example is, you know, with a cracked foundation, you try to build a house, maybe you can get up one story, but when it gets up to two or three stories, the foundation begins to crack. You know, many of us have cracks in our psyche, and they need to be healed. They need to be attended to so we can begin to really build a good life for ourselves. So that's our path of mindful living. The second path we call the Dharma path. Now, with a foundation, with a ground in mindfulness and mindful living, and having done one's emotional healing, one is ready really now to embark more seriously and expect more significant results from a spiritual path. And in our case, it's the Dharma path, the Buddha Dharma. And one of the first things that we say to people entering the Dharma path is, what is my aspiration for my spiritual life? I got involved at the mindful living path because of who? Because of me. I was suffering. Right? I was suffering. And through, and I wanted to alleviate, remediate to some degree my suffering, my stress, my anxiety, my worries, my emotional pain. So we enter that first path because of our personal suffering, the suffering of the self. For most people, that is the basis of their spiritual life. That's where it begins. I mean, that was where the Buddha began. Suffering and the cause of suffering, the end of suffering, the path that leads to the end of suffering. So it is our own personal suffering, it is our own personal needs, it is our own personal this, our own personal that, our own self this, our own self that, that brings us to the path. Okay. But now we are going to take, now we're kind of moving on. And while we still are obviously practicing to bring benefit to ourselves, what about the others? What about the others? Have I come enough out of my own personal suffering and my own focused on my own needs and wants? Am I willing to notice, become aware of, that I am not alone? Am I willing to begin to contemplate a life and an aspiration in which my spiritual transformation is as much about others and as myself? Is that clear? I mean, are there any questions? Can you see it's a developmental? It's like in the same way that there's what's called child development, the development of a child's mind and the stages that a child goes through. As it moves from its complete dependency to its complete narcissism, as it begins to kind of come out, right, and notice other people, and that other people are not there just to meet my needs, right? How do I relate to them? So again, up to now, it's all been about me. Now I'm coming out, and it's about how do I relate to people, animals, the earth, right? Is it all here for me? Oh, that's why you're all here. Now I get it. You're here just to meet my needs and wants. Oh, the earth. I know why it's here. It's just here to meet my needs and wants. Right? Animals, what are they here for? To meet my needs and wants, right? I get it. This is simple. Right? Or is it not like that? Because let me get this straight. See, if I think over here, I'm here, and you're all here to meet my needs and wants. Is that clear? Did you get that one? Right? I'm here, and you're there just to meet my needs and wants. Right? Maybe I need, I'm a Dharma teacher, and I need people to teach. Right? That's why you're here. Just to feed my need. Or maybe I have a great need to think I'm somebody special, right? And you're here just to, to meet that need of mine, right? That's why you're here. See, you might not even have known that, right? But in this world, that's why you're here. Don't be fooled by this kind of altruistic sharing the Dharma, blah, blah, blah. It says, no, you're here, I'm here just to get my ego needs met, right? Did everybody understand that? Okay. Now, what's the problem with that? Anybody see the problem with that? You see, the problem with that is I'm here, you're all here to meet my needs, right? But each of you is looking out through your eyes, looking at all this and me and going, no, you're here to meet my needs and wants. Right? Now, that's just in one room. Is that clear? That's just in one room. So if all of us looked around the room and everybody else we saw, we only saw them in terms of they're here to meet my needs and wants. They're here to reify me. They're here to serve me and my needs. Right? You can see chaos, competition, conflict. Oh, you know, that's just, can you see what just naturally arise? Disagreements, rampant. Is that clear? So that's one model. There could be another model. Another model could be what? We are all here to meet each other's needs. Huh? We are all here to meet each other's needs. What if each one of us has that mind state? What if we looked around the room and I would look in the room and say, oh, how can I meet all of their needs? Huh? I wonder what's going on with them. I wonder how I could be of benefit to them. See, 5 minutes ago, I'm looking at you going, oh, how can you be of benefit to me? What can I get out of this? Right? Is there any money in this for me? I don't know. Well, maybe I get a little, if I can't make anything financial out of this, maybe I can get some ego needs met. Right? That's what's in it. But what if I was about what's in it for you? What can I do for you? How can I be a benefit to you? And if everyone in here, rather than thinking what's in it for me, were thinking how can I be of benefit to everybody in here? Now, before it was chaos, right? It was conflict. It was disagreement. Competition. But when it's the other thing, can you see it's a very different way of interacting? This one is called altruism. This one is called selfishness, egocentricity, small-mindedness, only cherishing the self. This we'll be talking about. So, you know, why am I in this? Why do I want to practice a spiritual path? Is it just to benefit me, or is it to be of benefit to others? Because those are very different kind of minds to be cultivating. Is that clear? And in the Buddhism, we cultivate this altruistic mind right from the beginning. Because it points us. We may practice for years and years and years, but it points us in the direction we want to go. Is that clear? Any questions? I really want to do this kind of in an open way, that if there are any questions, but just what I've talked about, so we can all go together. Yes, about what I was said.
Sometimes we live in environments where we're practicing altruism, and in the immediate environment, we may have people who seek, what you said, the other, the opposite.
Okay. Well, I'm not going there yet. It's the first thing. Okay.
No, but so in listening to you, mm-hmm. I was like, wow, I want to live an altruistic life, and I live in an environment where of competition, and that's not, those are not, those, that other person very close to me, that's their goals, but I want to balance, and I want to be able to, I want to use the Dharma and the teachings in order to create peace of myself for the path.
Mm-hmm.
So...
yeah, but again, we have to begin with ourselves, Nancy. So the question is, yeah, I want to lead an altruistic life and have an altruistic mind, but, you know, there are all these jerks around me. I understand what you're saying. There are all these jerks. Right? All these self-centered jerks just out for themselves, you know what I mean? I always think, you know, how did a nice guy like me ever get involved? Right? Well, altruism is the answer. Because we look at them and the situation differently. But we're not, I mean, this is not like we become patsies and pushovers. But we're coming from a different place. Okay? Good. Any other questions about what's been talked about so far?
Okay. And mine may be the same question. So does that mean we give $1 to every homeless person?
Okay, you're way ahead of me. Let's just slow down. We're going to... first thing, let's kind of understand the concept, and then we'll, as we move through, we'll talk about what does this mean to the...
setting boundaries.
Yeah, and all that, right? That's all. But first, let's, you know, again, there in this world, there are endless actions, behaviors that look altruistic, right? Such as, you know, giving a homeless person $1 or $5 or $10, you know, whatever. Yeah, that appears to be an altruistic. But we'll talk about that, whether that really is. Because what we're talking about over these days is not action. We're talking about first the mind, the altruistic mind. Okay, that's what we want to talk about. Because many actions can appear altruistic, but they're really not. Many actions could appear that they're alleviating suffering, but they're really not. They're causing more suffering. So there's a wisdom here, but we'll... okay. Let's, all right, quickly. Yes, I don't want to. I opened up Pandora's box, but go on. I have nobody to blame but myself.
I just want to share that when you said, when you shifted the it's all for me versus for thee, it occurred to me that maybe it, for me anyway, it opened up curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
That I have now a path of curiosity as mm-hmm. opposed to control or anything else. So thank you.
It's good to have curious about this path. Yes.
I feel as though I can experience altruism briefly when I'm feeling really okay in myself,
mm-hmm.
and that I don't need anything from the other person I'm in relationship with, that I'm really feeling full and I'm feeling safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's easy. I'm not threatened, mm-hmm. and I don't need, but it's a really hard thing staying there. But, you know, the words up there, I am here for you. I guess when I recognize that, what is driving that, to turn that attention towards me, to heal whatever sense of neediness or vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
sets that up. But yeah.
That's interesting. And I understand what you're saying. Everybody heard the question. Obviously, she's saying, when I'm in a good place, I find it quite not that difficult to be there for others or have that kind of mind. But when I'm in a needy place, a compromised place, a vulnerable place, a fearful place, it is not so easy, or nearly impossible. And that is understandable, right? And obviously, as you will be learning, we have to learn to use the tools of altruism with ourselves in our own healing. But I would also say, with deep respect to everybody's individual suffering, much of our suffering comes because of our self-absorption. We need to recognize that. Oftentimes, because if you hear the language of our suffering, whether it's fear, whether it's safety, I am caring about what's going to happen to who if I'm fearful. I'm concerned about only one person. What's going to happen to me? Right? Safety. Whose safety am I concerned about? My own. Couldn't get a damn about any of you. You see, so we need to, altruism, we're talking about a mind. It's a change of a mind. And I'll be talking about that. It is more than often how it's presented, which is more like sort of thinking of others, not thinking of others. I mean, that manifests, but it's really deeper. That's why I say it really is. And in Buddhism, when you enter the Mahayana path, the Bodhisattva path, it's really generating this aspiration that I have lived all my life, if not lifetimes, for myself. That is who I have lived for. And where has it gotten me? Right? I mean, that's a very profound question. I have lived all my life primarily for myself. Doesn't mean I haven't been a nice person, haven't given to charities, haven't been kind, haven't been there for people. But when I look deeply into it, I realize it's all been around me. Right? That's been the central focus. And I take credit for all the good things I've done. And yet, have leading a life that is focused inside on me. Has it really brought me inner peace? Has it really brought me emotional stability? Has it brought me calmness? Has it brought me openness? Has it brought me, right? If I've spent all this work, if I spent my whole lifetime trying to keep myself safe, right? And most people have spent their whole life trying to keep themselves safe, you got to ask yourself, well, why after working this one for 40 years, do I still feel unsafe? You see, I mean, that's like an interesting question. You know? Could I have possibly been going around this in the totally wrong way? You know, like there's not something wrong with me. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the way I've been going about it is wrong. It's more of an ignorance of what's the best way rather than some kind of personal failing. Right? Like, I've spent my whole life thinking it's all about me, meeting my needs, getting my needs met. Right? Anybody ever been to therapy? What does your therapist want to help you do? How can you learn to get your needs met? Right? And they get two people together communicating, and how can we communicate our needs to each other? Right? Okay, and I was a therapist, so I can take responsibility for it. And there's good stuff around that in a certain way. But it's also saying, oh, I never thought that perhaps relationship is about how do I meet the other person's needs? Well, that's an interesting thought. I'm here to make them happy? Oh, I thought they were here to make me happy. You see? That kind of never dawned on us, right? You see? Oh, I'm here to give happiness to them. I'm here to do everything I can to create happiness for them. Oh, I thought they were here to meet my needs. Isn't that what people are here for? Right? Our children, our parents, our friends, they're all here for one reason. What is it? What are they here for, Nancy?
To meet my needs.
To meet my needs. And when they don't meet my needs, how do we feel?
Not good.
Not happy. They're not meeting my needs. Right? But interesting enough, when they are meeting Nancy's needs, how does she feel?
Happy.
Happy. What a world. So Nancy's strategy is, I get to hook up with all the kind of people who will meet my needs. And then I'll be what?
Happy.
And I got to get rid of all those people who do not meet my needs. Well, that seems like a good strategy in life. And many people do that for decades. And one day they wake up and go, what? It doesn't work. It does not work. It works temporarily. Right? When they're meeting your needs, right? When Andrew's meeting your needs, how's Angie? How's Nancy? Happy. When Andrew's not meeting Nancy's needs?
Not happy.
And then you have another problem. Because he also is looking at you to what?
Meet his needs.
Right. So when you're meeting his needs,
he's happy.
And when you're not meeting his needs, and that's what passes for a normal relationship. And we never think, is there something intrinsically wrong with that deal? Is that clear? Is there some fundamental flaw with that deal that will always keep us happy, unhappy, satisfied, dissatisfied, safe, unsafe, right? Relaxed, anxious? Is there another way? So, in the Dharma path, in our own community, and in the broader what's called Mahayana Buddhism, this generating this altruistic intention right from the beginning is recommended. In the midst of our self-centeredness, in the midst of our selfishness, right? In the midst of our fear and anxieties and vulnerabilities, we plant this seed. Because even in the midst of it all, there's a part of us that knows, yeah, that is a better way. That is a better way to live. You know what I mean? We have some common sense or something within us that knows, yeah, that is the better way in life. Okay? So we plant the seed. And what you'll be doing during the course of these couple of days is learning very ancient traditional practices that people in the Buddhist path have been doing for hundreds, if not thousands of years, to cultivate that seed. Right? Personally, I began my own path in the late 60s. It gets longer, it gets... These are my. That wasn't just 10 years ago, was it? In Zen, in a very traditional Zen. People familiar with kind of Japanese Zen? You know, very, very wonderful path. where there was a sense that somehow by going through the certain line of practice, intense practice, that somehow the end result would be this totally loving and compassionate human being. But number one, I didn't see it. And number two, I just, in my own, and in those days there was not too much available, but I had a sense, no, because Buddhism talks about love and compassion and altruism right from the beginning. And so it really wasn't first until I met Thich Nhat Hanh that I saw a very different kind of Zen. And then what was most significant to me when I went to a study in India in the mid-70s with the Tibetan teachers, that all of a sudden I encountered this very ancient tradition that there are meditations, that altruism is something that one can cultivate very deliberately. Is that clear? Very deliberately, this altruistic mind, this mind of loving kindness, this mind of compassion, this mind that sees interconnection of all beings, right, is a mind that can be cultivated, developed, right? And so that is what is going to be shared with you, and that's what you need to understand, okay? Don't fault yourself if even though you've wanted such a mind, that it hasn't arisen in you. It needs to be cultivated daily. It needs to be cultivated even hourly. It needs to be cultivated moment to moment. Is that clear? Because when we talk about an altruistic mind, it's this mind. Everybody, like right now, right? Your mind is attending to me. So this is your mind. Is that clear? Now, if you notice, this mind isn't just totally present and aware. It also has what? Many thoughts. Anybody notice that? It has many thoughts, many emotions, many feelings, many memories, many, many things are going on with it. And do you notice how often what's going on changes? Constantly. Things are rising, things are passing, things are rising. And that's been going on, you know, since you basically developed a language and thought and all that, right? So there is this mind that also has this stream of consciousness, and that stream of consciousness is made up of thoughts, feelings, perceptions that are continually arising and passing. And why are they in our mind? Why are they in our minds? Because we have been cultivating them, thinking about them, ruminating about them, acting on them for years and decades and etc. Okay? Is that clear? So that is why if there's somebody in here who says, wow, I really have been cultivating the spiritual path, I've been cultivating wanting to be a loving, more non-judgmental person, and yet all day long all I'm doing is judging people. Right? All day long from morning till night, I'm judging people. Well, why is that? Because the cultivation of the judgmental mind, the negative critical mind, we have been cultivating that very deliberately with a lot of energy and a lot of repetition for decades. Right? And how many decades you are, you can just multiply. Okay, is that clear? Right? So here's this stream of consciousness that has been conditioned in a certain direction for decades, manifesting without any effort on our own in thoughts and feelings and perceptions and reactivity, right? And all of a sudden, we've decided we want to be a loving, kind person and not and only have loving, benevolent thoughts for all beings, right? Isn't that what we'd like? Anybody want to maintain a judgmental, critical mind the rest of their lives? You wouldn't be here if you did. Right? No, we're here for this other. But this mind within ourselves has all this conditioning. It is our current stream of consciousness. Right? Anybody here ever have a critical negative thought? Do you plan it in advance? No, it's just what? You don't have to do anything, do you? Right? Nancy, I know you always told me. It's marvelous. It just arises by itself. You don't have to do a thing. Bam. Why is that? Because it's this stream of consciousness which has been conditioned. Okay. So, intention is the beginning, but we have to realize if I am not as deliberate and intentional and repetitive and disciplined about developing a loving, kind, understanding mind, which manifests in moment-to-moment ways of perceiving situations. Right? So it's a really, you know, it's not about you, it's about your mind. And we need to understand our mind has a life of its own because it has been conditioned in a certain way, of which we have, unfortunately, been somewhat of a participant. But a lot of it was childhood, early stuff, you know, that we were just sponges. You know what I mean? It wasn't like we even knew what we were doing. It just was sponges. We just took it in, parents, teachers, situations, you know, life. So here we are. We want to go in the direction of altruism, connectivity, love, compassion, kindness, open to others. Seeing others' needs as at least equal to my own. Others' wants at least equal to my own. Others' sufferings at least equal to my own. So this mind has to be changed, transformed. It is a new mind. It's the same mind, but it's a new mind. Mind, at its basic ground of awareness, takes in everything. It does not discriminate. It is us, in the part of ourself that has self-awareness, that can discriminate between altruism and selfishness. Right? Between good results and bad results. Between how I want to be and how I am. And that then takes us on this process of reconditioning our mind. If we want a loving mind, if we want a kind mind, if we want a mind that is always connected to other human beings in a kind, compassionate way, that has to be cultivated. Okay? So what you'll be receiving over these next days, and hopefully have already begun, is getting these very traditional ways of doing that reconditioning. The bodhisattva mind is not, I mean, the mind of this awakened, totally altruistic human being does not arise by itself. It comes after years and years of cultivation, self-discipline. But that is energized by a very powerful intention, aspiration, that one's life is about being of benefit to others. We give up our prior aspiration, which was what? This life is just about to bring benefit to me, and now it's about bringing benefit to others. It is a fundamental shift. Just doing that will change your life. questions about what's been said? Anything not sitting right or? Yes.
You talk about how we should put our needs equal to the needs and wants of others. I prefer not to use that. But then I thought maybe we were supposed to sacrifice our own needs and wants for others.
Yeah, well, it is both. It's a developmental path. Right? Yeah. I mean, for many people, just learning to put aside their own needs for a moment, their own to-do list for a moment, to be there for another person, that may be a good first step. Okay. The ability to really put aside all one's self-needs and to be totally devoted to benefiting others, could be, that's what we call a Buddha, right? When you look at people like the great teachers of our time, at least in the Buddhist path, Thich Nhat Hanh, Dalai Lama, now we have this new wonderful Pope, Pope Francis. You see, I mean, what do they do all day? What do they do all day? They're watching TV? I don't know. They're playing golf? I mean, what are they doing all day? Reading the bestsellers on the New York Times? No. What are they doing all day? Giving to others, right? They're just, I mean, you see it. So that's, I mean, don't make it, there are firemen who run into burning buildings to, you know what I mean? So there are people who do kind of these heroic selfless deeds, right? I mean, we know it goes on all the time. People sacrifice themselves really quite deeply. Soldiers, people, police, people often put themselves in danger, will sacrifice their own life. So, that kind of heroic is quite, but again, there could be different needs and aspirations. But yeah, so just... I guess what I would say was, if it begins, it's all about me, right? And the person opposite of is here to meet my needs, right? So like if you're in relationship with somebody, let's say you're in a relationship with somebody, an intimate relationship, a family relationship, a work relationship, and let's say they're just two of you, okay? Just to begin to go, oh, let me see. One relationship, two people. Well, 50-50 sounds fair. I mean, would you agree? 50-50? Yeah, I mean, all right. So let's say it's 50% about my needs and wants and 50% about your needs and wants. So that's what I'm saying. That's a good start, isn't it? Right? To get to the point where the happiness of others gives you more happiness than your own personal getting your needs. Yeah, that's where we go. And that's true. I mean, that is true. The interesting thing about this path of altruism is even though your focus is how can I benefit of others? How can I benefit others? How can I bring happiness? How can I take away others' suffering? Even though it sounds like that, actually, it really brings great benefit to us because we are happier. I mean, how do you feel when you're self-absorbed? Anybody here ever be self-absorbed? I mean, all right. I mean, if we're willing to, sort of like a recovery meeting or something. Well, we're all here, right? My name is Fred, and I've spent my life being self-absorbed. So we can all admit it here. Sort of like we're among friends, okay? Yeah, so when you're in a state of self-absorption, totally focused on yourself, and you know that, right? When you're angry, anybody ever get angry? Anybody here really get really angry? Yeah, how do you feel? Because when you're really angry, it's all about, right? Me, I'm right, they're wrong, I'm good, they're bad, right? Totally about me, right? If you step back and go, how are you feeling? I mean, are you happy? You're feeling relaxed and open and warm, fuzzy? Is that how you're feeling when you're angry? No. How do you feel? Miserable. I mean, you know, if we're honest, wow. You know, I'm angry at her, but I'm the one who's miserable. You know, I mean, you know, let's say I don't, let's say you were angry at Kelly, right? See, if your anger made her miserable, there could be a reason for it. Yeah, well, yeah, I'm going to get through it. You know what I'm saying? Well, I'm really so angry at her. And she's, you know, and it's, she's just kind of wilting over there. Or she's just feeling incredibly bad and guilty, right? But you're angry and she's going about her business. She's having a great day. Right? So, can you see? It's crazy, isn't it? When you think about it. You know? Anger poisons us. You know, you'd like to poison the other person. You're angry at them. But all you end up poisoning is who? Yourself. I mean, anybody here ever kind of get into a lot of worry? Worry, what's going to happen to me? Or what if this happens to me? Or what if that happens to me? Or what if this doesn't happen to me? Or what if that doesn't happen to me? Anybody ever worry? One of the happiest times of your day? What? No. How do you feel?
Terrible.
Terrible. I mean, see, it's like we all, wow. You know, see, we don't see it. We go, yeah. You know. And you're worried because of something that may or may not happen to you. I mean, it's, again, it's all, when we see that most of emotional affliction are arising because of self-absorption. It's all about me. Fears, worries, angers, resentments. Even a lot of sadnesses. What are we sad about? What are we hurt about? What are we sad and hurt about? Hmm? Anybody here ever been sad or hurt? We're sad and hurt because what? What's happened?
Didn't get what I wanted.
Didn't get what I want. You hear the magic word. Do you remember anybody old enough to remember Groucho Marx and that little bird would come down? There it is. The I word. Try being worried or angry or sad without the I word. Very difficult. Yeah, I mean, we're hurt because we didn't get our way. Or we're hurt, or we're sad because we lose something that was important to who? To me. And again, when you're hurt, disappointed, sad, anybody ever been hurt, disappointed, sad? How do you feel? Bad. I mean, so we've gone through anger, resentment, we've gone through fear and worry, we've gone through sadness and hurt and disappointment. Have you noticed there's a commonality in all of them? Suffering. We call that dukkha, suffering. It's common in all of them, suffering. Right? Alex is going, yep. But when you are connecting to others in a caring, loving, friendly way, how do you feel? Miserable? Amy says no. How do you feel, Amy? Good. I mean, there it is. Right? When you put aside some of your to-do lists and your tasks, to be there for another, not out of sense of duty or responsibility, because you really care about them, you know, because you love them, you want to be there for them, right? When somebody is suffering, you know they're suffering, and you go out of your way, right, to be with them. How do you feel? How do you feel, Susan?
Great.
Great. Right? do you feel as great as you do when you're angry and resentful and worried? I mean, how would you compare the two?
Okay.
You like that one. Is that clear? You see how simple it is? And yet we never step back to see the big picture, what's really going on here. So there are these two ways in life. Until we encounter a spiritual path, a path of healing and transformation, liberation, we have followed a path of self, a path of individualism. We have tried to find our way by ourself. And many people here, the older they are, the more efforts they have made. And good efforts. We've tried this, we've tried that, we've corrected, we've recorrected. And yet somehow it still hasn't worked. And it has not worked because there's something wrong with you. It has not worked because that path does not produce happiness. This path does. And it is a path that has been shown to be beneficial for thousands of years, not just 20. So, what we are talking about in this retreat over these next days, and this is nothing, just a couple of days, but hopefully you will learn enough of the basics that you can then take into your life and use for your own transformation. So altruism is this what? I mean, there are many ways of defining it. We'd say an altruistic mind is a mind that is what? That is concerned about others, that is concerned about the welfare of others, concerned about the well-being of others, concerned about the happiness of others. Would you say that that's an altruistic mind? Would somebody say it a little differently? Sort of, you know, just generally. And we would say the opposite mind, the selfish mind, is a mind that is what? Concerned with the welfare and the happiness and the well-being, right? And the peace and the safety and the security and the of who? Of me, right? So, I mean, again, obviously, as we just said, there are, you know, there's a movement. This is a continuum. But here we would say total self-concern. Selfishness. I am concerned only with my welfare, my happiness, meeting my needs, my wants, getting my to-do list done, getting everything lined up just the way I wanted, having a world just the way I want it, having people just the way I want them, have everything going my way just the way I want it. Right? Sounds like my 3-year-old grandson. Right? But with him, it's cute. When you're 33 and 63, it's not so cute. Is that clear? So that's what that looks like. And this altruistic mind is going through life and in relationships, open, present, feeling connected, and really engendering one's mind as one encounters everybody, as if you're encountering a friend, as if you're encountering a family member. When you encounter a friend and a family member, and these are friends and families that you have good relations with, you naturally what? How are you with your friends? What?
Care about them.
You care about them. You know, how are you doing? Right? You want them to be happy, don't you? You don't have to think about it. You want them to be happy. When you hear they're not happy, how do you feel? Great? No. Yeah. So I wonder if there's any way I can be of help to them. Right? It's a natural thing, but we do it in a tiny area. And we mostly do it with who? With me. Because all day, my agenda is what? What can I do today to make Fred happy? Anybody know that? Right? What can I do today to make Fred happy? What kind of pleasure can I give him? What kind of nice food can I feed him? What kind of experiences can I give him that he'll like? Right? I care about his welfare. Right? When he's suffering, what do? I do something to take away his suffering. Right? I'm right on it. Right? Priority. Right? Fred's suffering immediately. Let's take care of it. Plan Fred's day so it goes just the way he wants. Anybody know that kind of life? That's our life, if we're honest. Right? But there is another way. Who can I be of benefit for to today? How can I bring happiness to another, pleasure to another today? How can I care for today? And again, this is a transformation. This is a change, but it has to begin. And it begins by developing this kind of mind. And one of the things you'll be doing today is we begin with meditations that create connection. It's very important. Empathy, compassion, loving kindness, all these things kind of are more easier to develop when there is a sense of connection to. Why, when I have an itch on my head, does my hand go like that? Anybody know? I mean, the hand isn't itchy, right? I mean, what does it care about the head? Let him scratch himself. That's why animals rub up against the walls, I guess. You know, why does the hand take care of the head's itch? Connected. It's connected. It's a connectivity. Somehow this body feels connection. Different parts feel connected, so they kind of can take care of each other when they can. When we feel connected, altruism, caring, loving, wanting to alleviate suffering is easier, more natural. Is that clear? When there's disconnection, when there's rugged individualism, so to speak, empathy, altruism, compassion, much more difficult or non-existent. So the first thing we have to do is begin to come out of our bubble of self-centeredness and begin to notice our connection to life. I mean, how can you ruin a planet, as we have done? I mean, how can you ruin a planet? I mean, I don't know if it's ever happened. How do you just go into a planet and within a couple hundred years ruin it? I mean, make it almost uninhabitable that people are talking about, right? I mean, people are talking about the extinction, right? I mean, before you believe all these projections, right? I mean, how can you do something like that? Anybody have an idea? Yeah, you don't feel connected. You don't feel connected to the earth, the sky, the clouds, animals, plants. It's just me. And I'm here for what? Remember? Fred's here what? To meet whose needs? His needs. Screw the planet. Right? I mean, do I ever think about future generations? No. Let them take care of themselves. I take care of myself, they'll take care of themselves. Right? Isn't that right, Alex? Yeah.
Getting into politics now.
Again, politics is about mind. It's people's minds. I mean, there's nothing, people go, how can people be like this? People like this all the time. The only difference is now people are doing it publicly. Right? Most people just do it in the privacy of their own mind, their egocentricity, kind of keep it under wraps. All of a sudden we have people going out, yeah, I'm a total narcissist. Vote for me. Right? I mean, most of the other ones are narcissists too, but they keep it under wraps. You see? They're like, oh, they've kind of learned to kind of act like they care about other people. And all of a sudden you got a guy coming out, I don't give a damn about anybody. Vote for me. There may be something beneficial in that. So, it begins with connectivity. Okay? And maybe you've already had a little of it, but this is very important. We have to begin to notice our life is sustained by the earth, not Publix. Our life is sustained by the earth. Our life is sustained by air. Right? I mean, our life is sustained by water. We have to come out of our egocentric, narcissistic bubble and notice our connectedness, our interconnectedness. Is that clear? We have to notice we are interconnected with each other. People who've been around me a while know. I mean, when I do the metta meditation and things, we talk about, you know. I woke up this morning in a house that I did not build. Somebody built it. Right? Human beings built that house that I'm living in. And the wood that it's made of, somebody, you know, it came from trees that grew in the earth, that somebody logged, that somebody milled, that somebody, you know. Everything in my house came from another. The food I ate this morning came from others. Grew it, shipped it, cleaned it. Turn on the water. There are people taking. Oh my God, there are people taking care of the Tampa water system to make sure that I get water. Right? I mean, it's like a miracle. Right? I turn a little switch, lights come on. Why? Because of others. Right? I get in my car. You know, miners, smelters. Steel, plastic, you know what I mean? It's all factories. People sell cars. All the gift of others. I drive on a road. Whew. Not an easy job putting down roads, is it? Oh, hard work. Especially in Florida in the summer. I mean, it's hard work. Dirty work. There are guys out there doing it all the time. I didn't do it. I mean, can you see? We come here. You know, I didn't create this. Other people did. Other people feed us. I mean, can you see? This is just tiny. Tiny, tiny, tiny. To acknowledge our connection with others. Oh. You know, you get gas. Oh. Go into the convenience store. There's somebody there. Going to Publix, somebody there. Connection to others. And that's just, again, it's everything. Clothes I wear, altar pictures. Now, when we see that we're all connected and interconnected, now comes the interesting thing. Is there, beside this connection, a function? Are there other things that connect us? Well, what Buddhism has always said, there is one significant thing that connects every human being on this planet. And that is quite simply, everyone. wants to be happy, and no one wants to suffer. Is that clear? Unless they're highly disturbed, everybody wants to be happy, and nobody wants to suffer. Is that clear? Everyone wants for the people they love, for them to be what? Happy. Everyone, for the people they love, want them not to what? Suffer. We're all the same in that. That person who waits on me in public, that person here, that person on the road, that person who's driving slow, that person, they all want to be what? Happy. They don't want to suffer. We are connected in that way. We're the same in that way. Now, in response to that is my response, it's every man and woman for himself. Right? You want to be happy, you want to be happy, you want to suffer, well, work it out yourself. My job is what? Make sure that Fred gets his happiness and you don't suffer. What's the problem with that? Well, I can't do it by myself. I can't do anything by myself. We need each other. Because I may be having a good day, but if you're having a bad day and I encounter you, you've just ruined my day. Right? Damn it, I'm trying to be happy today. Right, Rob? I'm trying to have a good day. You know, and your bad attitude is just ruining my day. Is that clear? My happiness depends on your happiness. And your happiness depends on my happiness. I am here for you. You are here for me. What a different way to come at life. Questions? So, there will be some meditations today that will cultivate this sense of connection and interconnection, benefactors, you know. Whatever your relationship was with your mummy, you would not be here without her. Is that clear? We owe a deep gratitude to our mothers. Whether they were a good mother or a bad mother. They bore us in their belly for 9 months. Anybody here ever been a mother? Pregnancy is really just great. No discomfort. I mean, no, everything was, right? No. Yeah, they went through discomfort, pain. Nausea. Childbirth, just what? Nothing easier than that? Right? No. Many women say what? It was painful. Right? And yet what? Our mothers did that for us. And even if they were not able to be the most loving mothers, they did bring us into life. And they did preserve our lives, the doctors, the nurses. Where would we have been without them? We wouldn't be alive. All throughout our life, there have been benefactors. Physically, mentally. I often joke with people. I say, anybody here love to read? I mean, anybody ever read Dharma books? Spiritual books? We love that stuff. Well, where would you be without your first grade teacher, your second grade teacher? I mean, right? I mean, when's the last time you went Wow, I bow to my first grade teacher. Thank you. What a gift reading has been. You know? So again, this way of reflecting, and not just for starters, do you know what I'm saying? I mean, we all have. This way of reflecting begins to change our mind. We get out of this self-mind, right, and begin to know, wow, I'm interconnected. I'm the recipient of so much from everyone. Right? I'm connected with everyone. I have had so many benefactors in my life and continue. And when you begin to experience this connection to, and when you open up that connection so it's not just dispensed to a few, but you open it up to the many, right? Now, as you cultivate empathy, as you cultivate loving kindness, as you cultivate compassion, it will be much easier. Many people find it difficult to do those kinds of meditations. And a lot of times it's because we don't feel connected to others, right? So in Buddhism has always understood that that's why it begins with establishing this kind of connectivity first. Is that clear? And again, for those of you who maybe in life have felt disconnected, right, have felt lost in your own suffering, your own individuality, your own meanness. That's fine. I mean, that's the way it is. But these teachings and these practices are going to help us change our mind. And when we change our mind in terms of perceiving the world as interconnected, et cetera, as we change our minds into seeing our connection with human beings and all the support and nurturance we get from human beings and how we could not be alive without them, then we change our relationship to them. We can care about them too. Their happiness, their well-being, their safety. I just don't want myself and my loved ones to be happy. I want everyone to be happy. Because everybody is part of some family, right? I mean, why should I just only think about my own? Right? I see Carmen back there. I know Carmen. Carmen's got a wife, two nice kids. I mean, yeah, I'd like them to be happy and free of suffering, right? I mean, doesn't that seem fair? I mean, everybody's like that. You know, everybody had a mother. Everybody had a father. Everybody is somebody's child. Most people have somebody who cares about them. Why should I only think about myself and not understand that and be aware of that and want to nurture that in everyone? Can you see the different mind? It's a different mind. The bodhisattva mind, the awakened mind, the mind of altruism is a different mind. It looks at life differently than from the point of view of self. I see we've come to the end. So questions. Let's talk about questions. I realize today there'll be practice. Again, so everybody knows that. This is not your traditional meditation retreat. We offer many of those. This is a altruism retreat. We are sharing these precious meditations that help one cultivate this sense of connection, connectivity, kind of equanimity in terms of feeling, getting rid of this partiality. I like these few, I hate those, and most people I couldn't care less about. That's the way most people do it, right? Few people are in our like category, few people are in our hate category, and most people we don't even think about. We want to break out of that. begin to care more equally, extend our hearts, open our hearts, open our minds, and then to learn how to generate real loving kindness, friendship, compassion, caring to everyone, ourself included, to make that our mind state, rather than that critical, judgmental, walled off, self-absorbed mind state. We want to change this continuum of consciousness. Fortunately, because Buddhist psychology teaches that there is nothing permanent in the mind. It is just a product of conditioning, and when you recondition it, you have a different mind. It's really that simple, but it's a process. And you will learn the process over these next couple of days. So any questions? I'll be back tomorrow. Hopefully you'll have a good taste of what it's about, and we can talk about what you're experiencing, if I can be of any help, and we'll continue with these teachings. But I really hope to kind of journey with you over these next couple of days. And the key thing is to practice. Just practice. Even as you go around this thing, every time you see anybody, may you be happy. You know, look them in the eye. May you be happy. May you be free of suffering. Just get used to saying that. Every time you see somebody, may you be happy. May you be, look people in the eyes. May you be happy, free of suffering. I mean you. That's the way bodhisattvas are. That's their first thought. Not what a jerk this person is. Bodhisattvas don't think that way. Bodhisattvas don't see a world of jerks. People not acting right. Bodhisattvas aren't like, school principals trying to get everybody to shape up. No, bodhisattvas love human beings. They want them to be happy. They're friendly to everybody. I mean, you know, when people, they talk about the Dalai Lama, they say he's just amazing. Why? Because he's friendly to everybody. Right? Big shots, little shots, rich, poor, young, old, doesn't matter, wherever he is. He's friendly to everybody. Why? Because he cultivates these practices. These come from his tradition. He didn't come out of nowhere. His mind and actions didn't come out of nowhere. They came out of cultivation. If you want to be like the Dalai Lama, like Thich Nhat Hanh, just do what they do. It's very simple. Don't think like, oh, they're there and I'm down here. No, you just do what they do. Any questions? Yes?
Just one thing. Let's say you are doing it for people, being altruistic, and there comes a point where you don't feel like you're getting any good back. Do you suggest?
Oh. Yeah, I got a lot to say about that. But tomorrow, first you generate the mind, but remember that question. That's a good one. Yeah. But first let's get the doing, and then we'll get the results, okay? So that's a good question. Just hold it. Any other? Yes.
If I decide that I would like to make other people happy, mm-hmm. perhaps at the expense of my own happiness, where do I draw the line? What if my wife would like...
Well, hold on. Tomorrow we'll talk about that. That's a sort of, it's like... See, this is why we're so nuts in this society. we're always... Results oriented. Well, if I do this, can you see? I mean, I'm laughing with you, but that's just slow it down, Jim. Let's first learn about altruism and the altruistic mind, and then it's just a variation on what Louise said. That's important. I mean, I'm saying let's see. We're always, we're always trying to check it out. Well, if I do this, what do I get? Can you see our minds always calculating? If I'm nice to this one, will they then be nice to me? Right? Okay? We'll talk about that tomorrow. But please, if I don't talk about it, I mean, these are good questions. Any other questions about what has been shared this morning? Anything not sit right? Anything I mean, for people who are new, please understand I'm, you know, you can challenge it. I don't, anything not sit right, anything you think is off base, anything doesn't make sense to you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I've been trying to do this for a long time, mm-hmm. and I was trying to do it, mm-hmm. and it was never working.
Mm-hmm.
So now I need this little key, evidently, to mm-hmm. learn how to do this.
Right. Yeah.
Because I've been wanting it.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, and that's what this is about. As I said to you, 40 years ago, I kind of had the same thing. I mean, I was practicing Buddhism, practicing meditation, and, you know, very seriously, but I just, you know, that loving, open, soft heart just wasn't coming. I still had the old kind of way.
So it's because we've been conditioned.
Yeah. Conditioned, yeah. That's all.
Alcoholic father.
Yeah, oh, please. Yeah, and everything else. I mean, is this with... Yeah, right. I mean, whether it was altruism and loving kindness and wanting the welfare of everyone, was this talked about around your dinner table growing up?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, what was talked about? What was talked about?
You better eat your food, or...
Yeah, and then you hear, you know, these people are...
Later,
right, or these people are jerks, or, you know what I mean? This is the kind of stuff we hear, and people always gossiping, and families, and blah, 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 talking bad about other... You know, and you wonder, well, where did I get this critical mind from? You know? Came from, not in Buddhism, everything comes from something. So there's always cause and effect. So if you wonder where this mind of yours came from, just look to the past and you'll see it. And then you'll stop identifying with it, Darlene, because you know, yeah, this is not my mind. I mean, if I had a choice, I'd make a wonderful, happy, loving, right? This is the mind I gathered just by osmosis, from these parents and the situation and what was going on in the neighborhood. You know what I mean? The whole deal.
And how lucky we are that we can change this.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for that.
Right. I mean, finally, oh.
I've been pretty miserable for a lot of years.
Yeah.
Trying.
Yeah. So, right. You're absolutely right. So, and again, that's why we say, you know, this is a joyous path, because it's like, oh, now I get it. Oh, no wonder I've been suffering. Right? No wonder everything I've tried hasn't worked. Oh, now I get it. Right? Oh. As well as now I find a path that works. And it's not because Fred said so, it's because it's been practiced for thousands of years. I mean, it's like, it works. You know, it's worked for everybody who practices it. That's a good recommendation. Yes.
Don't we need to know what another person's happiness is or means to them before
you
we
try? Love to get ahead of things, huh? Tomorrow. Let's just get our own act together first, then we'll take care of others. Any other questions? Yes.
I remember once you told me, Sandy, it's getting late, but I don't think it's ever too late, and you're not saying that. The light can come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's I'm grateful for that.
Right.
Really coming on.
Yeah, so Sandy's saying it's never too late in terms of age or whatever. No, I mean, like, you know, if anything, the older you get, it's wonderful when you're young and the light goes on, because then you just save yourself a lot of misery. Right? But on the other hand, if you're older, you've got a lot of misery to kind of, that when you hear the teacher, you go, oh, yeah. Okay, so it's all good. So we will end for today. Thank you.